Welcome to the Radical Mother Village. If you're new here, a radical mother is a woman poised in her power, ready to disrupt cycles of generational trauma, running through her family like wildfire. She's working to improve her life, the lives of her children, and shape the landscape of her community. If that's you, you're in the right place. This podcast is designed to connect you with the resources, inspiration, and the reminder that you are not alone as you embark on your journey of radical mothering. In this show, you can look forward to conversations with fellow cycle breakers, experts in the field of trauma healing, and discussions on the foundational elements it takes to turn your goal of breaking cycles of trauma into a reality with topics like nervous system regulation work, reparenting, and releasing trauma that's held in your body. I'm your host, Krista Bevan, an expert companion for radical mothers, and I'm so excited you're here with me. Now, let's dive in. Hey, mamas, welcome back to another episode of the Radical Mother Village podcast. I'm your host, Krista Bevan. And if you have listened to any episode of the show in the past, you have probably heard me talk about Dr. Stephen Porges, the man that developed the polyvagal theory. And you have probably heard me talk about how much I love him and his work, how much I rely on his work in my work, how inspirational I find the research and information that he has provided to the scientific community. And not only has he created the polyvagal theory, but he also has created something called the Safe and Sound Protocol, which is what my special guest, Melissa Corkum, and I are discussing today on the show. So Melissa is a Safe and Sound Protocol practitioner. She talks about what the SSP is, why it's so important for all radical mothers to know about it, the role that it can play in helping to shift our confirmation bias that can be created very early on in our childhood. Melissa talks about that and some of the origins of confirmation bias. But essentially, this is our nervous system's tuning towards safety. It's our orientation towards the world. It's the lens through which we see the world. So for some of us, and Melissa actually gives two really great examples in here of two of her different children and how their confirmation biases are very, very different. But essentially, we can either be biased towards safety and the world feeling comfortable and the world feeling like a place that we can be safe and curious and open to, or we can be biased towards the world feeling a little bit less safe and a little scarier and a little more unpredictable, and that we need to show up in it in a way that's a little bit more guarded and reserved. And what the Safe and Sound Protocol can help us do is retune ourselves towards safety using the principle of neuroplasticity. So we cover all of that in this episode. I already knew about this protocol and I learned quite a bit in this episode. I know that you are going to as well. I know it's going to pique your curiosity. So Melissa shares some links in here for how to find other SSP practitioners, as well as how to work with her. She has a really incredible container of coaching and Safe and Sound Protocol and learning cues of safety and learning how to provide those for your children. She has all of that she offers as services to parents. And so I highly recommend you check that out and work with her if that makes sense for you. So Melissa is a post-adoption support specialist. She is the co-founder of the Adoption Connection. She is a Safe and Sound Protocol practitioner, as I mentioned, and she's also an adoptee. Melissa Corkum has helped hundreds of adoptive parents shift to a brain-based view of behaviors so they can laugh more and yell less. And when she's not working with parents, she loves helping other adoptees process their stories using the Enneagram. She and her husband Patrick have 6 kids by birth and adoption, and they've taught her a lot about what creates thriving parent-child relationships and what doesn't. Okay, without further ado, let's get into today's episode, why all radical mothers need to know about the Safe and Sound Protocol, with special guest Melissa Corkum. All right, mamas, welcome back to another episode of the Radical Mother Village podcast.
I am very excited to be chatting with my friend, Melissa. Melissa, welcome to the show. It's so nice to connect. We have connected many times before, but never actually for the podcast. So I'm excited to have you on as a guest.
Krista, thank you so much. It's my pleasure and honor to be here.
So Melissa, can you just let the listeners know a little bit about the work that you do? We're going to be talking about a very particular aspect of what you do, but just sort of broadly what you do and also how you came to that work.
Yeah, well, I would say first, I'm a mama and wife, and we live just outside of Baltimore, Maryland, and my husband and I have 6 kids, 2 by birth and 4 through adoption, and it was our kids through adoption that kind of put us on a path of learning more about the nervous system and the brain and behaviors and all the things, because what worked for our first 2 kids in terms of parenting and all the things I thought I knew about what it meant to be a good parent proved themselves to be very ineffective with our next 4 kids. And out of that work came parent coaching. I mostly work with adoptive families now through a business I co-started with a friend of mine called the Adoption Connection. But I do maybe like 10% of my caseload is non-adoptive families who come to me, you know, through podcasts like yours or referrals from friends who've adopted, because what we teach adoptive families is really great wisdom for all parents. It just, adoption makes it such that I think a higher percentage of adoptive parents end up needing to learn about all of this than maybe the neurotypical population.
Yeah. And I will give a shameless plug to being on your email list, which I am on, even though I am not an adoptive mother, but you do share some really wonderful tips and resources that are applicable to, you know, because the radical mother audience that's listening to this, there's a lot of similarity between the work that you do with adoptive families and the work that we're doing, in the sense that we can't always follow typical parenting advice, right? We're falling outside of that spectrum. And we need different advice. And so a lot of your stuff is great, even for radical mothers who just have biological children. So go sign up for Melissa's, for her email list. We'll link all of that in the show notes. But Melissa, today I want to focus on one of the offerings that you have and that you facilitate for clients, which is called the Safe and Sound Protocol. So I came across the Safe and Sound Protocol because I was studying the polyvagal theory, which was developed by a man named Dr. Stephen Porges, who also developed the Safe and Sound Protocol. So I'm going to turn it over to you and let you explain what that is and why it matters and why we care, and we can get into all of that.
Yeah. So polyvagal theory added to some basic knowledge that a lot of us already know about the nervous system in terms of our stress response. And most of your listeners have probably heard of fight, flight, or freeze. Sometimes we are talking now even about 4 Fs: fight, flight, freeze, and fold or fawn. And he broke down even more physiologically kind of what's happening in the nervous system. And he defined 3 different physiological states that the nervous system is in any given time, largely due to the data that our nervous system is taking in, both internally from our bodies, you know, signals about whether we're hurt, sick, tired, hungry, all of those things, external signals about stuff that's happening around us in our environment, sight, sound, smells, and then cues between nervous systems. So even though we're not, you know, in real life together right now, Krista, our nervous systems can still send a lot of messages, even just through the video platform that we're using. And so those 3 states kind of make up polyvagal theory in just, you know, really basic, like you could spend years studying this and I just gave you, you know, like a 30-second overview. But that's the basis for what Dr. Porges figured out about the Safe and Sound Protocol. And the Safe and Sound Protocol is a therapeutic listening protocol. And basically it does a couple things through music. One is that it moves our nervous systems to what he calls the top of the polyvagal ladder, which is one of those 3 physiological states. And it's the one where we are the most open, the most brave, the most social, most accepting, perhaps the most regulated. And then over time, the Safe and Sound Protocol also helps change the confirmation bias in our nervous system. And what I mean by that is every nervous system is taking in data and it has a bias through which it interprets it. So if we, I tell the story a lot about two of our kids. One of our kids, I forgot to pick up from a friend's house a couple summers ago. Like, I mean, total bad mom movement. Now this was a 17-year-old. So it wasn't like a 3-year-old that I forgot, but he had to call me. It was like 10, I was supposed to pick him up at like 10 o'clock, which is honestly a little past my bedtime. And maybe I shouldn't have, you know, committed to such a thing anyway, but he calls at like 10:30 and he was like, I was just wondering like if you're on your way. And I was like, oh, you know, shoot. No, I'm not, but I am now. And because he is one of our kids by birth and because his confirmation bias is that the world is generally a safe place and that he's connected to safe people, that didn't really rattle him that much. You know, he has great problem solving skills. He was like, I mean, if I couldn't get a hold of you, I would have just spent the night. Like, it's no big deal. I would have called you in the morning. He didn't assume anything bad had happened to me. He kind of assumed the best. Like, he assumed my mother, who I know usually goes to bed by now, probably, you know, forgot and fell asleep or whatever. Which is super gracious to a mother who like legit made a terrible mother move. Right. And, but his framing is that like the world's pretty okay and he's okay. And so he's able to kind of explain away hard things that happen in a very resilient way. On the flip side, we have a couple of kids whose confirmation biases are the opposite of that. And their assumption is that they're alone in the world and that the world isn't safe and that people don't want to be near them, that they can't trust people. And so we have a daughter who lives out of state who was scheduled to come home for a visit last summer, 2021, still kind of on the edge of COVID, and it got COVID canceled because, you know, COVID things happened. And we all know that those things are 100% out of pretty much anyone's control. And that caused a chain reaction in her where she couldn't communicate to us for a couple months. She was holding a lot of anger and resentment and shame around, I knew you didn't want me to come home and visit. It's fine. I don't actually really need to be a part of your family anymore. I'll probably be okay on my own. You know, I'm not going to reschedule because I realized I don't really need you because of that confirmation bias. And so that confirmation bias that our daughter has creates, you know, what we call in the parenting and behavioral world, misbehavior a lot of times or anxiety. And so what the Safe and Sound Protocol can do is help reset that confirmation bias more towards safety, which then, you know, downstream creates a ton of shifts in the body and potentially the behavior.
So we can get into the mechanics of how the protocol works in a minute, but can you just speak to this confirmation bias piece a little bit more? Because and those two stories perfectly illustrated the difference, I think, in how our outlooks of the world can be. Where does that come from? What's causing us to have a confirmation bias one way versus the other?
It's all an experience, you know, and it's a confirmation bias that the nervous system decides pretty early on. Right. And so because of that, even when I work with parents who maybe have adopted at birth, right? Like they did like a private infant adoption. And so they're bringing home an infant and they're like, I don't understand why there's a problem. They've been safe. They've been with us their whole life. But the thing is the nervous system is forming and developing this confirmation bias in utero. So, you know, we say that all children come to us with, you know, at least 9 months of history that we potentially weren't a part of. And so that could be stress hormones that are inherited from a mother to a child. You know, research shows that the stress hormone profile of a mother is reflected in a child up to a year after delivery, which is I think empowering and stunning and scary all at the same time.
Yes.
Right. And that doesn't mean inherently by itself anything bad, but it just helps explain that some of us are just born with having interpreted experiences that made our bodies think that the world wasn't predictable enough. And so that can make us wary and think that we don't have this sense of felt safety. And what I mean by that is not that you're actually safe or not safe. It's just the sense of whether you're safe. And so, you know, if you're bathed in stress hormones for, you know, not because you weren't safe, but, you know, the stress hormones that are created, whether you're stressed out because you work a demanding job or because you're not getting enough food, kind of all look the same, you know, from a stress, from a just a chemical perspective. And so baby doesn't know why it's under stress. It just knows that it's under stress. And so that could create this confirmation bias of, I'm not sure, you know, if I can trust that I'm safe, even though from an objective standpoint, looking in, we might say like, well, that baby's totally safe. They're with parents who love them. They get food regularly. They're clean. They're, you know, they have shelter, all those basic needs. But the nervous system is taking in so much other invisible information that we just don't always aren't privy to.
Mm-hmm. And that stays with us forever, right? This idea that it's about perceptions of safety. I talk about this on the show a lot. And in the work that I do is that it's not about, and I find this with moms a lot who will be telling me like, I feel anxious and there's no reason that I should. It's like, well, objectively, there is no reason that you should be, but somewhere on some level, your body is perceiving a threat that it's responding to in the pattern of anxiety. And the same can be true for our kids, right? That they can be perceiving these things. Like your son perceived, okay, well, mom is probably asleep, but it doesn't mean anything bad happened. And your daughter perceived, they don't want me. And therefore, I'm going to act like I don't need them to get ahead of those feelings of being let down and sad and hurt by all of that. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it even goes as back as far, there's all this new research on something called epigenetics, right? Which is how our genes express themselves. We know we get our genes from previous generations. And I know, Crystal, a lot of your work is around this intergenerational like layers of experiences and perhaps trauma. And so there's a lot of even longitudinal studies about, you know, children, grandchildren, descendants of say Holocaust survivors show a propensity towards that anxiety that you're talking about. And again, because, you know, maybe three generations ago, you had a grandparent who was in a terrible situation, whether it be the Holocaust or something else, developed this sense that the world might not be okay, carries that chemical response in their body, reproduces with that chemical response in the body to, you know, and it just carries down. And it's a mixed bag, right? I think the explanation is incredibly helpful because I particularly process the world through thinking and logic. And so knowledge to me is also extremely comforting. But I also understand that you can hear that and think, well, we're all screwed, right? If something terrible happened anywhere in our family history. And that's not true because of the work that you do, Krista, because of the Safe and Sound Protocol. Once we know better, right, we can do better. And what we need to also remember in light of all of those things about how stress can carry through generations or through our life is also that the nervous system has a property called neuroplasticity, which means that it's changeable. And so with intention, we can also shift the landscape, which means there's an incredible amount of hope and promise and healing in all of our futures if we desire to do that work.
Yeah. Well, and this is why I like you so much, Melissa, because you and I process the world in a very similar way through logic and information and then using that to leverage, you know, leveraging that to say, now, what can I do to make the most of this, right? And this idea of neuroplasticity is definitely one of those things that gives hope to this otherwise sometimes overwhelming news, right? So let's get into the neuroplasticity and how we can tap into that using the Safe and Sound Protocol. What is the Safe and Sound Protocol? How does that, what are the logistics and the mechanics of it? I guess I'll ask it that way.
Yeah. So, you know, on some level, we kind of already know how this works from a science perspective, maybe not from a science perspective, but we have a sense because we know how much sound impacts things. So some examples would be, we know how Hollywood uses music, right? We know that a scene is supposed to feel scary or suspenseful based on the music. And we know what happy endings and Disney princess, you know, feelings are, how those are represented in music, and how musical score is like its own thing, right? We also know as mothers, we usually naturally speak differently to children and toddlers who we know are not using explicit language, like our words. They're using more of our tone. Same thing with animals. Like, we know that our dogs don't truly understand the individual words we're saying, but we absolutely know how to communicate something to them through the tone of our voice, you know, whether we want them to get excited about a walk or a treat, or whether we're very disappointed in them because they destroyed something or made a mess or whatever. And so all of that is our inherent knowing of how sound impacts the nervous system. And so the science behind that is that there is a frequency envelope of frequency sound that cues safety to the nervous system. It happens to be what we call the prosodic human voice, the human tone that we use to comfort and connect with other people, also is scientifically the frequency that the brain knows is connecting. And we know that relationship is a huge part of felt safety, that co-regulation is a thing. And so what Dr. Porges figured out was how to filter music, regular music that you may hear on the radio or in a movie, to only contain the frequencies inside that safety envelope. And so sometimes that music sounds a little bit different than it might sound on the radio, because it might be missing the bass line, or it might be missing some of those other notes that don't match the frequency. But basically, through listening to that filtered music, we are hyper exposing the ears and the nervous system to sounds of safety. And what that does is it physiologically changes the eardrum. It actually tightens the eardrum so that we're filtering sounds differently. It's different than your ability to hear a sound. It's more how the nervous system's paying attention to sounds, right? So we're recording in the summer, and so my air conditioning in my house is probably running at a pretty low frequency, and I'm not paying attention to that right now. Now, if I focus on it, I could hear it, but my nervous system's filtering it out. And so it's the same thing. When you have a negative confirmation bias, the nervous system is filtering for sounds of fear, which is a completely different frequency than sounds of safety. And so by hyperexposing the ears, we can kind of flip that switch, if you will. And so what's interesting about the Safe and Sound Protocol is the results kind of happen in a delayed fashion, because what we've done is given the nervous system a new way to interpret the world. And so then it takes a couple weeks, up to a month or so, for that new interpretation to really settle into the nervous system. And then, you know, for some of those downstream effects to show, maybe in terms of behavior or other things.
So you just mentioned behavior. So what are some of the things, and excuse me, you've kind of touched on this, but what are some of the things that benefit from someone participating in the Safe and Sound Protocol? What are some of the things that lend itself really well to helping to retone the ear in that way?
So we mentioned polyvagal theory at the beginning, and poly means many, you know, in Greek or Latin, I think, or, you know, one of those things. And what that means is that the polyvagal nerve goes to many areas of the body, and the polyvagal nerve regulates things like respiration, heart rate, digestion, the quality or tone of our voice, our nonverbal communication, facial features, you know, what our eyes are doing when we talk, what are, you know, all those little tiny muscles, and then how we're receiving all of those things. And then it also is in charge of interpreting all of our sensory systems. So the five senses we were taught about in elementary school, plus some other ones like proprioception, our vestibular sense, our interoception, all of those things. So think about all the different things that are connected there. And then practically what that looks like is better regulatory function, maybe in your digestion. So we can even look at things like, you know, better digestive patterns, improved sleep patterns because the body's interpreting social cues and sensory input differently. It could be mean more focus because there's less distraction from other sensory input that maybe the body wasn't processing correctly. It could be an improvement in relationships because the body is physiologically better to both give and receive more appropriate social cues, interpret them better. Sometimes parents will tell me, you know, my kid will say, why are you yelling at me? And I'm not yelling. I'm just trying to, you know, offer this advice or this thing, or they're always asking, are you mad, mama, or something like that. And the parents will say, I don't think I'm acting mad. Right. And that's because of this like miscommunication in the polyvagal nerve, low vagal tone. And so as we increase that vagal tone through the safe and sound protocol, a lot of those things change. And then, you know, that's kind of like the primary brain part. And then there's secondary behaviors from that. So if we're interpreting social signals more appropriately, or we have better sensory processing, we might not lash out inappropriately. We might not hit unnecessarily. We might not, you know, X, Y, and Z, some of the behaviors that come from having a misinterpretation of the information that the world is sending us.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So Melissa, when someone signs up to work with you, what can they expect? Is this something that can be done virtually, or does it need to be done in person? And is it like one session you listen to music and then it has retoned your ear? Or is it a series of sessions? What does that process look like to work with you?
Yeah, I only work virtually with folks. So it can be done virtually depending on the situation. Sometimes there are indications for working in person with a practitioner, and some folks do that. You can go to integratedlisteningsystems.com to see a list of practitioners in your area if you think in person would be better. I kind of do this hybrid virtual approach where I meet with folks, we do some intake, I do a little training with you about the nervous system, about your nervous system, we do some nervous system mapping activities. And then there's 5 hours of what we call core music that make up the core protocol. And I work through that with you, or your child, or teach you how to work. I would say for children, the better way to phrase that is I teach you how to facilitate those sessions with your child, because ultimately it's an attachment activity as well and a co-regulating activity. And so for children who need it, it's best for them to do it with a caretaker or a parent. And I have a system that we use so that I can get continuous feedback about what might be going on in your nervous system as you're listening. And so then I can titrate the 5 hours of listening at a rate that your nervous that honors clients' nervous systems, because if we don't honor that, you know, if we ask the nervous system to change too much at once, that can feel more dysregulating. And so we don't want that to happen. So it takes different amounts of time for everyone. In my practice, I never have clients listen for more than 30 minutes in a day. Some practitioners will have folks do an hour. I try to just err on the side of caution. And so that means if you listen every day, in 10 days, you could finish the entire protocol. I would say it takes more folks a couple of weeks to a month because, you know, life and schedules, and sometimes the nervous system needs shorter sessions, et cetera, et cetera.
Great. And you answered one of my questions, which is this something that you can do with your kids? Because I'm sure that people are listening to this going, this sounds amazing. I think I need this, let alone my children. This sounds like something I would benefit from as well. So it is the kind of thing that you could do with another person.
Yeah, I actually recommend that entire families go through the protocol together. It doesn't mean they're going to be listening at the same time, but it means they have access, and it's delivered through an app on, you know, any phone or device. And so I always tell families, if you have access to the music, you might as well have more folks, you know, as many people go through it. I do require parents, whichever parent or caretaker is the person facilitating sessions for the child, just because in my world, mostly parents are coming to me with children who need this. I require at least one parent to go through it as well. Just because if in a co-regulating world where we're regulating each other, often by the time parents come to me, they have a sense of dysregulation just about the stress of parenting a child with really big behaviors. And so just seems prudent all around for everyone to get a really good nervous system reset.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And as you and I know, oftentimes the way to get improvements in children is to actually work with the parents, and that it starts with them and then affects change. And in this case, it really is affecting change, because when mom or dad can show up and be better facilitators of co-regulation, it's going to help their children and just make family life better for everybody. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's delivered through an app. That's so great. Isn't technology wonderful?
You know what? This is one of the things that COVID forced the SSP world to do. And, you know, in terms of silver linings, this is one of them, because I actually used to ship physical equipment around the country. And that meant I could only have two families doing SSP at any given time, because I had two sets, you know, I had two MP3 players and two sets of headphones. And I currently have probably 35 families on my caseload. And so it's just astronomically changed the impact that we can have as SSP practitioners.
I was going to ask, because I was thinking, and I was like, I feel like my memory is that you had to have the physical like headset or the physical music in order to listen. And so that's why I was surprised to hear you say that there was an app. And yes, a silver lining of COVID, there have been a few, and that is really good to know that, that's available like that now.
Yeah. It's been a game changer for a lot of families.
I bet. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, speaking of which, Melissa, I think you will have definitely piqued the curiosity of a lot of listeners. So if somebody is listening to this and is like, yes, I need this, tell me more, where can they go connect with you and find more of your work and find how to work with you as an SSP practitioner?
Yeah. So my website is thecorkboardonline.com. It's just a kind of a play on our last name. And if you go to thecorkboardonline.com/SSP, there's a page there that just reviews a lot of what we already talked about, has some more information. And then there's also a link there to schedule a free consult with me if you want to know more or want to know if virtual delivery or in-person delivery would be a better fit for your family.
Perfect. All right. And I will put all of those links in the show notes. All right, Melissa, is there anything that I missed? Anything that a newbie to Safe and Sound Protocol should know that I should have asked that I didn't think of with my pregnancy brain?
Yeah, I would say with anything, and I'm sure your listeners probably know this, there's no quick fix for anything. And SSP is a very powerful tool in the toolbox. From a parenting perspective, when we're talking about kids and changed behaviors, if you don't use me, you want to find someone who kind of gives a more wraparound approach and is going to provide, like I tell families, when we're doing this, SSP is like one really powerful way to cue safety to the nervous system. And it's only at the max 30 minutes a day. And so along with SSP delivery, I train parents how they can deliver cues of safety in their house and in their family and to their children in as many ways as possible, because that will maximize the effectiveness of SSP. I used to give it as kind of a standalone service in my practice. I used to do like parent coaching or SSP, and then like there was an option to do both. And now I kind of do both for everyone, because I find that the parents that I'm coaching, I'm like thinking in the back of my head, like, y'all really need SSP, right? To like get you over this hump. And then folks who are coming just for SSP were kind of looking for this quick fix. And there were a lot of other pieces in the family dynamic that weren't really the best foundation for SSP. And so they were going through the motions and not seeing the results. And I don't know. I just think it needs its own little like extra layer of wraparound. So I would just say that to folks. The other thing I would say is we don't get to choose where the nervous system shifts and changes. And so for nervous systems that have lots of areas where they could shift or change, sometimes you need more trips through the protocol, if for lack of a better term. And, we do pre and post assessments in my practice so that parents can see, or individuals going through it can see, where the shifts occurred, because sometimes they don't show up where we want them to. Like say there's five or six shifts that could happen in your nervous system that would like maximize you know, the integration of your nervous system, and you were really, really, really hoping for like a digestive change. And maybe that's not the one your nervous system prioritized. It doesn't mean it won't happen, but sometimes depending on how far your nervous system is kind of like out of tune, for lack of a better word, then sometimes it just takes a little patience.
Yeah. I was going to ask if it takes, if this is something that you revisit from time to time with folks occasionally, and it sounds like that.
Yeah. Sometimes, I mean, I always say shifts are permanent unless there's more trauma or actual, like sometimes an ear infection, swimmer's ear, some like ear trauma can kind of undo what we've done. But if you need 3 or 4 shifts, you might still need 3 or 4 protocols to kind of get to where you want to be. And some people need one. It's just every nervous system's different and it's hard to make a lot of generalizations. But I've just seen it have such a massive effect on so many families. I think it's always worth a shot. And in the grand scheme of all the different body work things that we can do, it's kind of a low ask. I mean, it's listening to music, and from a financial perspective, when we think about, you know, 60 sessions of neurofeedback or other things that also shift the brain, which are all fantastic, and our family has used them all. So I'm not saying one or the other. But if you're like, I'm just not really sure, I'm new to this like nervous system body work thing, SSP is hundreds of dollars, not thousands of dollars. So
yeah. Yeah. An important consideration for sure. All right, Melissa, thank you. I have learned a lot in this episode, and I'm sure that others have as well. So I appreciate your time and your wisdom. Thank you.
Thank you, Krista. It was so nice to be here, and thanks for having me.
All right, mamas, that wraps up another episode of the Radical Mother Village podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, will you do me a giant favor and share it with another mama who might love it too? You can also share on social media and tag me. I'm on Instagram at The Radical Mother Village. And if you are looking to connect with fellow radical mothers who are also doing this work and understand the unique challenges that it can bring up in your parenting life, then I would love to invite you to the free Facebook group I facilitate, which is also called The Radical Mother Village. You can search for it on Facebook, or you can follow the link in the show notes to join us. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next week.